So turning now to the social construction of objects. So in this video, we'll start by asking, what does it mean for objects to be socially constructed? I'll look a little at the views of Simone de Beauvoir, which were very influential. And also I'll describe a bit the looping effect that's very important in Haslinger's text and for understanding claims of the social construction of objects, or humans in particular. In the second part of the video, I'll also explain some of the technical words that Haslinger uses in the text, which have to do with the ways we understand in philosophy how the commonalities get grouped together by our concepts. So different ways in which we can understand those. Examples that I'll look at are the idea of essentialism, the idea of family resemblance. But starting with the social construction of objects. So first, what do we mean by objects? Following Haslinger, we mean anything that's not an idea. So it can be material objects, fruit, vegetables, but also individual men and women, people. Obviously, we already exist. We're not brought into being by society. But in a sense, we're socially constructed because certain features we have. We have because of how we've been categorized by society. And this is what is meant by a social construction of objects. How we view ourselves and how others view us within particular contexts. As we've seen in the first video, I mentioned it, part of our self-identity and our identity within society. It's partly, but very significantly, affected by the gender that we've been assigned by our society. So really the classification, the labels that have been applied to us construct us, they change us in certain ways. So we've seen that our concepts, understood as classifications, group together particular objects or individuals as a kind, but it's not just that pre-existing individuals fall under the concept grouping, Haslinger says. It's also that the classifications have the power to establish and reinforce groupings, which might eventually come to fit the classifications. As she puts it, each of us is socially constructed in this sense because we are, to a significant extent, the individuals we are today, as a result of what has been attributed and self-attributed to us as individuals. So these views really come from de Beauvoir, very influential French philosopher, existentialist, feminist, and her most famous work is this book, The Second Sex, came out in 1949. It has two parts. But in it, she discusses women's roles in society throughout history and in different cultures. She discusses how women are oppressed by society's conventions and expectations. And it's really her work in which we find kind of the basis for this sex and gender distinction, which we now use. And the famous line from this work is that one is not born, but rather becomes a woman. And this statement is really a statement about the social construction of a woman as an individual or as an object in our terminology today. So she argues in this that men are seen as normal, default, while women are seen as the other, the second sex. Men are understood as strong, women as weak. And societies and men's expectations of women make them unfree in various ways and keep them in subordinate positions within society, which means that women have not been able to achieve their full potential. But she argues that this way of being a woman that's been constructed by society as being unfree, oppressed, passive, bound to certain roles, it's not natural, it's not inevitable. It's a result of certain historical and cultural frameworks. She also argues that women themselves must fight to win their freedom and achieve full potential. We can't just sit back and wait or expect men to do this for us. So there's a video here. I won't play it just for issues of time, but I recommend you can watch it. It's an interview with her in 1967. So after the book, she's discussing how things have changed since its publication and the women situation of women in France at that time. She also explains how women's liberation depends on a change. We need a change in practice, in particular in regards to working life. She argues that for women to have equality with men and to enjoy the same freedoms as men, women must also more fully participate in working life. Turning now to this looping effect that's very important in Haslinger's text. The looping effect happens when an object is changed as a result of being classified. So the classification itself, it's not reflecting something kind of necessarily in the person, but it's also imposing something on the person and changing that person in many respects. So examples are all babies, as we've seen at birth, they get classified as either boys or girls, and then they get brought up as either boys or girls. More typical, little girls get sent to ballet lessons, boys get sent to soccer lessons. So children learn this quite quickly, that being a boy involves some expectations that are different from the expectations of being a girl. And what's interesting and kind of terrifying as well is that the children themselves soon then learn this, but they also enforce it. They'll bully each other if they see kind of deviations from these expectations. If they see one of their male friends dressed in a dress and they've been taught that only girls wear dresses, then they're going to be confused, but they'll also maybe bully their friends into fitting into these categories. So, yeah, it starts quite young as we're growing up. So people are very responsive to social norms and expectations and actually will change themselves in order to meet these expectations. Or rather, it's more realistic, we get continuously treated or habituated to have these expectations upon us. We're always being treated this way, then we just internalize and we continue acting this way and then reinforcing the way we've been categorized and the way we've been socialized. So the social expectations and treatment, the way society perceives and treats someone, obviously differs depending on the categories in which you've been placed by society, how they view you. So some different social categories: women, men, white people, black people, rich people, poor people, all have different expectations placed upon them and end up behaving as a result of the way they're being treated due to these frameworks and institutions reinforcing this social role. So being classified in a certain way can have an effect on individuals and change them in a direction that could have been different if the individual had been classified in a different way, or if the social rules in relation to that particular classification had been different. So it's very contingent. So This idea of looping effects comes from Ian Hacking. He says to create new ways of classifying people is also to change the ways we can think of ourselves, to change our sense of self-worth, even how we remember our own past. This in turn generates a looping effect because people of that kind behave differently than they are different. So reinforcing the classification that you've been put under. And another effect of the, another aspect of the looping effect is that it serves not only to change individuals in order to fit the classification, but it also serves to reinforce these classifications. And in doing so, it makes it quite difficult to detect that these rules are being imposed upon us by society rather than being innate or natural. So it makes it difficult to see that some things are actually socially constructed rather than things that we're doing on our own. So a little example here with this loop. If we have a social classification where office work or housework is perceived as women's work, then this creates an expectation that the woman is to perform office work or the housework. And in turn, woman does this based on these expectations and society pressure upon them. But in fulfilling this role, performing the social role, it reinforces this perception of office work or housework being women's work. So the social roles reinforce themselves as they're changing the individuals to fit them as well. So the looping effect, of course, only applies to people, or maybe animals, but certainly it doesn't apply to inanimate objects. An example is the social construction of gold. So gold is understood as a natural kind, being a chemical element, how we classify it in chemistry. And yet it's socially constructed as well. Not that our social interactions bring gold into existence, but it changes our concept of gold. It depends on our social context and culture and history that we understand and interpret gold in certain ways. But us understanding and classifying and using and valuing gold in these cultural dependent ways is not going to actually change gold itself. Gold isn't being affected in that kind of way, that there's a looping effect here. Nevertheless, again, our full understanding of gold is still socially constructed. It changes and differs between times and cultures. So as a summary of this part of this talk, I've said that to be a particular gender is to occupy a particular social role, according to Hassinger and also de Beauvoir. It means behaving according to the norms and expectations of your gender. And human beings, as members of a society, internalize these conventions from being continuously treated in this way, that we come to enact these roles. And in turn, we're enforcing them and reinforcing them in society. So the looping effect is that human beings as individuals themselves respond to being classified in a certain way, as being put in this category of a particular gender, and actually get changed through being treated as such. So, as I said, I'll now just describe a bit about how we can understand these different commonalities, how in philosophy do we explore the different meanings of the groupings, or how we can build these classifications based on commonalities between different things. So how do our concepts group things together? Already you're probably thinking, well, really, when we say this concept of biological sex groups together certain physical features, does it really mean that all males have a particular set of physical features that's common to every male? And same for females. Is there really a certain set of physical features that's common to all females? Even as we've defined the concepts and enforcing them. And similarly, what does it mean that a gender is defined by enacting a particular social role? Does it really mean that all men behave a particular way and all women behave the same way? So this is a difficult question in philosophy, and there's different ways of trying to understand what it is that all men have in common and what it is that all women have in common, even within these concepts we're building. So how do we build concepts? And two examples, essentialism. Another example is family resemblance. Essentialism assumes that objects have natural and essential common characteristics which are inherent, innate, and unchanging. So if you're an essentialist, then you're assuming or using the idea that there's some feature or features that all women share by virtue of which they are women. And Haslinger argues against this idea of essentialism as being implausible. And particular social constructionists are arguing against essentialism as well. An alternative to essentialism, so instead of thinking that there must be some particular feature or some particular set of feature that every member of this concept classification must share, an alternative to this is the idea of family resemblance. So on this idea, things which might thought to be connected by one essential common feature are in fact connected by a series of overlapping similarities, where no one feature is common to all of the things. And this idea of family resemblance, it comes from Wittgenstein, a very famous Austrian philosopher, and is described in his book, The Philosophical Investigations, which was compiled after his death, based on his own lecture notes and personal writings. But in it, he gives the example of games. So games is a concept that groups together many different things. We have card games, we have board games, ball games, singing games, role-playing games, computer games. They all fall under our category or concept of games. But he asks us, is there actually any one feature that's essential to being a game? Do all of these different things that we call games have anything in common? He argues no. If we actually go through and try to find something, what we see instead is a complicated network of similarities overlapping and crisscrossing. So he calls this a family resemblance. So imagine you have a family, and you can definitely group them all together because there's something common to them all enough that you're able to recognize them as a family. They resemble one another. And yet there's no one feature that they all have, or one set of features that they all have. For instance, this guy and this woman might have the same eyes. This woman and this woman might have the same smile. These might be aunties and uncles, parents and children. These ones might have the same nose. In turn, she might have the same hair as this guy when he was younger. So there's a network of things. Maybe between each two, you can recognize some things in common. But there's no one thing. They don't all have the same smile. They don't all have the same nose. But maybe, yeah, this one's got the same nose as this one. But this one doesn't. But he's got the same smile as this one. So it's a network of things that allow us to group together the objects under a particular concept. And yet it's nothing, I know, essential. There's no one thing that they all share. Or not even a set of things that they share. So those are some examples of how a concept might group together particular features. For sex and gender, Hassinger says we might have something weaker than an essence, but stronger than a family resemblance. So that's quite vague, but hopefully by knowing the meanings of these terms now, you can see what she's getting at, of how these groupings capture something in common to everyone, enough that we're able to fit them into the category, and yet we might not be able to pin down something that's the same for every woman or the same for every man. And yet we can still use these categories effectively and enforce them. Okay, so that's it for this video. In the final video, we're asking, well, what was the point of this discussion? Yeah, men and women are different. Yeah, we respond to our different categories. But what else? What's the point of pointing this out? So we'll look at this in the